This is the Careering into Motherhood podcast, and I'm Jane Johnson. My guest today is Sarah Brammel. Sarah is a former teacher who left the profession after her third child and went into coaching women to have more fulfilling careers. It wasn't an easy path for her. One of the things we'll talk about today is how you can make that change and evolution in your career when a lot of people around you perhaps don't think it's such a great idea for you. Sarah and I, we talk about her top five pieces of career advice for women. Sarah, brilliant to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Jane. It's great to be here chatting to you today. And I love all that you're doing in the Careering into Motherhood community. It's very inspiring.
Thank you. As I always say, though, it is genuinely, we are only as strong as our team and the, you know, the coaches, the expertise that we have within that cohort is nothing short of phenomenal. And of course, you are one of our coaches. We're going to talk a little bit about your top pieces of career advice for working mums. But before we get into that, just give for our listeners a little bit of background about you and how you got into coaching.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. So I was a secondary English teacher for 18 years prior to transitioning into coaching, and I loved teaching. I never thought I would do anything different. And then I stumbled across coaching almost accidentally. I went on a leadership course. We were put into groups of three to do some coaching practice. And as I was doing the practice, the two ladies that I was working with said, "Wow, Sarah, you're really good at this." And I kind of knew then that they weren't just sort of flattering me. I kind of knew that it was a genuine compliment, and it just planted a seed that made me think, wow, there's something here that I need to explore further. And what happened then was I had gone back to work having had my third child. I still thought that I wanted to stay in teaching, but I was beginning to kind of feel the pressure of, did I want further promotion? All of that stuff around how do I manage three children and my career. And I went along to the Coaching Academy for a free two-day event, as it was in those days. And I had been in the building about 5 minutes and totally fallen in love with coaching. And went on to train with them. So I did the sort of initial diploma, did a further qualification in education, and then qualified as well in NLP. And now, 6 years down the line, I am now a lead trainer on their flagship diploma. So it's kind of come full circle. And yes, I'm coaching, but I'm also training other people to be coaches, which is absolutely wonderful because it means my inner teacher is feeling very satisfied.
I'm sure. Yeah, that's an amazing story. So yeah, the apple has not fallen that far from the tree.
Exactly.
So I guess as a trainer of coaches, and obviously you work with clients yourself, narrowing it down to five pieces of advice must have been pretty tricky. But if we can, let's go with your first piece of advice.
Yeah, so my first piece of advice came from an amazing dame who's a great leader in education. And I attended a conference for female teachers some years back. And her key message in her talk there was that good is good enough and that consistently good is outstanding practice. And I'm kind of using sort of education talk there, but it really resonated with me because at the time there was a pressure in the classroom for every lesson to be all singing, all dancing, for every child to be making exceptional progress, all of that stuff. And it felt like a very, very pressured environment. And to hear that from somebody who was so much further down the line, so well respected in the educational space, and just to know that if I showed up every day and I consistently did the best that I could, that was good enough. It didn't have to be that I was kind of burning myself out or going all out every single day, because as we know, that really isn't sustainable, and certainly isn't sustainable while you're trying to raise a family as well.
I have talked about this quite a lot with friends recently, that I think we feel as mothers, whether we're working or not, we seem to have lost sight of this ability to accept that we are doing our best. And as you say, you know, whether it's looking at other people on social media, I'm awful at this. In the school holidays, often we'll have days where we just do nothing. We just hang out. And then at the end of the day, I'll check Instagram or something and I see all these people who've done these amazing days out with their family. And I think, oh my God, we need to be doing that. I'm not good enough. I haven't done enough. Have I, you know, given him enough entertainment and stretching him and that kind of thing? I mean, it's just one small example, but it's hard to tell yourself you're doing okay, isn't it?
So I think it's really easy as working mothers to compare ourselves to others, even without the comparison factor of social media. As a mum at the school gates, a working mum at the school gates, look at maybe the stay-at-home mums who we might perceive, this might not be what's really going on, but we might perceive have somehow got time to go for the coffees with other mums or do more in the PTA or produce homemade cakes for the cake sale. And to compare ourselves to that standard and think, I'm not good enough because I haven't got the capacity to do that. And then tell ourselves the story that we're failing on all fronts or that we're not enough on all fronts. And that narrative is something that I've really had to work on and sort of coach myself to say, do you know what? I'm doing the best I can with the tools I've got. I'm staying in my own lane. I'm good enough. All of that narrative, something I've really, really worked on over the years and something I really support my clients in as well, is working on that self-talk.
Brilliant advice. Yeah. And I think especially as we're coming into Christmas and all of those things there that seems to get laid at our feet. Really great piece of advice. Thank you. What's your next top tip?
So my next top tip is to define your own version of success. And actually what I find with clients is often it's not until they come to coaching that they're asking themselves that question for the first time. Because often the women that I work with have been high achievers. So they've done really well at school. They've gone on to university. They've gone on to their graduate careers and been really high achievers through all of that. Now, for some people, that trajectory is 100% the right place to be. They're motivated by career progression, they're motivated by status, they're motivated by making money, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. You know, that's absolutely to be celebrated. But sometimes what happens is that we kind of get shoehorned into a version of success that doesn't really belong to us. And often it's when we've had children and we have that opportunity to pause, maybe over maternity leave or in that space of return, and think, actually, is this what I really want? And is this really what success looks like to me? And it takes so much courage to go against the status quo and to say, actually, no, I'm going to choose something else, and to have that courage and then that build that confidence to pursue a path that maybe is going against the messaging of your parents, your sort of extended family, your friends, your colleagues, etc.
That's really interesting. You effectively did that yourself. I mean, going into education, there is a very clear trajectory. It's vocational. In theory, it's seen as a job for life. And apart from you yourself getting your head around making a change, was there an expectation from those around you, friends and family, when you said you were leaving? Were people wholly supportive, or was there a kind of, oh, are you sure? Is this the right thing to do?
No, there was a real resistance, actually. It was very interesting. And I find this a lot with clients. It's often the people who are close to us who are most resistant to us changing, because they love us as we are. They want to keep us safe. And so the status quo feels like the safe option. So when you put yourself out to make a change, it can be really threatening for people. So my husband has been supportive, but there was some resistance from him initially. He's a doctor, he's had that vocation from university, and he thought that it was the same for me, that I would always be a teacher. My mum was an ex-head teacher, and she really had difficult to wrap her head around, firstly because she doesn't, still I would say, probably doesn't really understand what I do as a coach. But also, having been a head teacher, that was such a huge vocation for her that she was like, wow, you can't leave the children. You know, the children need you, Sarah. So there was that kind of pressure from my mum. And also in my community as well, because the school I'd been teaching was a pretty high achieving school. And there was a kind of a certain status, I suppose, attached to working there. I was teaching a lot of my friends' children. And so there was a lot of kind of societal pressure, like, oh my goodness, but I was really hoping that Johnny was going to have you for English next year. And, you know, how can you leave? There was all of that going on as well. So, yeah, it really did take quite a lot, actually, to, again, to kind of just focus on what I wanted and follow my path, just, you know, against that sort of external pressure.
That's a really interesting point. I want to kind of dig into that a bit more. Did you just feel so convinced that coaching was the right thing for you, that you were able to just bat off any of that feeling, especially when it's coming from, as you say, you know, your mum and people who are incredibly close to you. I'm just interested in how you felt and how you managed to keep focused on what it was you actually wanted to do and get there.
A lot of mindset work and a lot of support. And I wouldn't even say that I managed to bat it off. It really felt much more of a struggle than that. And I often use, when talking to clients, I use the metaphor of the butterfly inside that cocoon, where it's that process of change, kind of dark and pretty ugly, and it takes that tremendous effort for the butterfly to sort of push its way out of that cocoon. That process of change is not necessarily a smooth and an easy one, and it certainly wasn't for me. So it really did take that mindset work. But I suppose I was fortunate because I had a vocation as a teacher, so I knew what that looked like, I knew what that felt like and sounded like. And so when this second opportunity came along, I knew that I could have chosen to quash it, and I could have chosen to ignore it, and I could have stayed in education, and I would have been happy enough in education. But when you've got that little voice inside of you, or you've got that little whisper or that little spark that's telling you to go in a different direction, it takes courage to follow that. But also, I think if you ignore it, if you quash it, down the line, it's going to lead to regret. And again, that's something that I really encourage my clients with. If they think, I've just got this kind of this little idea or this little spark of something. Yeah, and that's where coaching really comes in, actually, because it needs somebody to stand beside you and walk alongside you in that journey and sort of cheer you on and coach you through that process, because it's not something that is easy to do alone.
Yeah, I hadn't heard it spoken about like that before, but you are absolutely right. We sort of see, again, on social media or reading things in the press about people who've made changes or launched businesses, whatever it is, and we see them at the point of success, but it is a dark and bumpy and sometimes lacking in confidence path that you have to tread. So having someone on your side to be able to talk all of that through is really powerful, as you say, and that's where coaching absolutely comes in. Let's move on to your next tip.
So my next tip actually is very much related to defining your version of success. My next tip is about getting clarity on what your values are. And again, this isn't a question that we tend to ask ourselves very often. So what's most important to me? Now, when I did this work initially in my coach training, my values, my top three values are love. So love of my family, but also love of my work, love of the people that I'm working with is absolutely central. Growth and contribution. Now, it was the growth that really struck a chord with me when I first did that work on my values, because ironically, as a teacher, I had stopped growing professionally. I was working, as I mentioned, in a very high achieving school, very academic school, but it was a school that really valued tradition and really valued the status quo. So they really didn't welcome me coming in with my bright ideas, my creativity, trying to do things differently. They wanted me to keep doing things the same way that they had always done them. And although that was, that's their choice, it wasn't my choice. And so I had been in the job actually just a few weeks, and I met an old friend for dinner, and she said, "Gosh, Sarah, you sound like your wings have been clipped." And I thought, wow, she's right, and it was because of that value of growth wasn't being met. But it wasn't until I did the work on my values to identify my top values that I came to the understanding that that was why I felt frustrated, that's why I felt stuck, and that's what was missing for me. It was to do with the environment that I was in. So again, when I do that work with clients on their values, that is just so often such a game changer, because so often what we think is important, or maybe what we've been giving our time and energy to, actually isn't the most important thing. But when we get that connection to our core values, again, it's kind of like a compass. It helps us to find the right path and then to take those next steps forward, knowing that those values are in alignment.
It really is. The listeners can't see us, but I'm just sitting here nodding like a dog in the back of a car. I've done that work before, this evolution of careering into motherhood and the community and so on. And it really was 100% born out of that exercise of looking at what my values are. And I'd previously come from a corporate environment, very restricted,
not aligned to my values. And I kept changing jobs. And then I kept wondering why it wasn't right. And I, you know, then you end up thinking, oh, it must be me, I'm not doing things right. But actually, it was just that what I was doing wasn't aligned to my values. So it was never going to work in that kind of environment. Really great, great advice there.
That's really interesting to hear that, Jane, as well. I'm glad that that resonates with you as well. And it's a rare opportunity. It's a rare thing in life that we have that opportunity to go, oh, okay, let me just dig into my core values and check that I'm alignment. You know, it really is a privilege to do that work.
Yeah, it is true. And actually, it's a good point, because I remember when the coach suggested doing it, and I thought, oh, goodness, I don't, you know, what's the point of this? I didn't really even understand. I thought it was all quite airy fairy. And then I, you know, did that work. And as I say, it was just as clear as day. And I have done it since. And certainly since motherhood, I think my values changed over time. So again, it's definitely worth picking up an exercise, doing something with a coach if you can, reevaluating on a semi-regular basis, isn't it?
Absolutely. No, I agree. And that is, again, very, very common for values to change as a result of motherhood, because our priorities change. And again, sort of having a baby naturally gives you that opportunity to pause and reassess, reprioritize what's most important. So it's a really important time to do that work, you know, having had a baby, having come through that huge, huge transition.
Can I ask you about your next piece of advice? I think we're on number 4, aren't we?
My next piece is very simple, but I think very important, and it's to get help. Because we talk about the juggle as if it's kind of a badge of honour. When we talk about balance and we talk about juggle, it brings up red flags in my mind, because I think of that juggle or that balance as being something that actually is really precarious. And it depends on us to keep all of those balls in the air. And I think when we stretch ourselves too thin, then what happens is that we generally neglect either our health or our relationships. You know, we might keep performing really well at work. We might, I'm sure, keep our children well cared for, but it tends to be health and relationships that go. And so the only way I can see to sort of counteract that is to get help. So whether that is asking for help, which is so hard for so many of us to do because we like to be independent, we like to be self-reliant, but asking for help from friends, asking for help from family, paying for help where we need it. And I again talk as a voice of experience here. It wasn't really until my third child that I accepted that actually I did need more help. Prior to that, I had always had the minimum child's care that I could get away with, the minimum help at home that I could get away with. And actually I learned by my third child, I thought, no, if I'm going to enjoy this, I've got to really make that space and allow myself to be supported. And actually by child number 3, there's no option other than to ask for help, because it's just not possible to do it all by yourself. So that's been, again, it's been a learning journey for me. It's not something I got straight away, but could I go back to the early days of my first child, I would definitely have a strong word with myself and say, hey, do you know what? You don't have to do all of this alone. It's okay to ask for help. And when you ask for help, it gives other people permission to ask for help as well.
Yes, that's a really good point. It really is. You know, women having children now, we're in an interesting point, because a lot of our parents perhaps didn't work as well as, or our mothers, let's say, perhaps didn't work as well as doing everything around the house and looking after the children and things. And yet, you know, this generation, obviously, we've got more women than men going to university. We're taught we can go and have those careers that we want. But then we feel this real pull between needing to do it all at home and be super successful at work. And as you say, this idea of admitting you need some help can be seen as, oh, I failed. Your first point about accepting good enough is okay. And it's definitely something that I have struggled with, definitely. I remember my friend was reminding me the other day how I, when my son was born, my mum had mentioned in passing something about he should iron his vests. These are like, oh, baby grows, you know. And I was like, oh my God, okay, I must iron his vests and baby grows. And he hardly slept as it was. You know, when he did go down eventually at like 10 o'clock at night or whatever, and I was absolutely shattered. I was there, right, I better iron his vests and do everything and so on. And you just think, oh my goodness, what are you doing? So to anyone listening, don't iron vests, get some sleep instead.
100% agree. My goodness, it's incredible what we absorb, isn't it? And I think especially first time that we have a baby, we're so impressionable because we haven't done it before. You know, we're so kind of keen to take on advice, and sometimes that advice isn't perhaps what we would choose with the benefit of hindsight.
Hindsight is 2020. That is very true. Your final tip, please.
Okay, my final tip is your network. This is something definitely in which men probably have an advantage in the workplace, that networking and that natural sponsorship comes more easily or is more accessible perhaps. And I think as women, it's something that we really, really need to work on. Developing those professional relationships, both with our peers and with helping those kind of below us, but also making those connections and developing those relationships with people who are where we want to be or who have done what we have done. I see a lot of women, especially younger women in the workplace, sort of saying, you know, I want to get a sponsor. And I think that can work sometimes, but I think what tends to work better is when we have cultivated genuine relationships and making time for that network. Now, again, it's a challenging thing because when we're raising a family and doing a job, it's really hard, I think, to make time to invest in that professional network. But something I've probably learned more actually as a business owner now than I did when I was in teaching. But, you know, they say your network is your net worth. It's kind of cheesy, but there's a lot to be said, I think, by really cultivating and growing your network.
Definitely. And the irony is that women are actually the ultimate social network. We are so good at talking at the school gate, at sorting things for our kids. You know, it is like you mentioned before, the coffee catch-ups after drop-off and things like that. Often they are done with our children in mind because for various reasons, you know, we want our children to have good friends in the class and so on. The other thing I always say is the mum drum beats the loudest. So if you need help, if you're looking for something, you're looking for work, or you want to move into a particular company, and just tell your mum friends because they want to help you. We are so good at helping each other, but we kind of feel, I think when you use the word networking or build your network, it sounds so caught up in the 1990s idea of men in suits wandering around with a warm canapé and work in that room. But it's not about that these days. It's putting your needs and wants out there and seeing who can help you, because we love helping other people. We really do.
I absolutely agree with you. I think it's something really, really powerful and sometimes neglected in the pressure to do everything else.
I have loved talking to you today. Some really practical advice, really interesting to learn more about you and your background, your career. So I wish you all the best for going into 2023. And people can obviously find out more about you via the Careering into Motherhood website, and we'll put the links and things in the show notes. But thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Jane. I've loved speaking to you today.
5 brilliant pieces of advice there from Sarah. I love that they were all neatly packaged up and really, really practical. So huge thanks to her. Really, really great conversation. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, don't forget to check out our website, www.careeringintomotherhood.com, where you can catch up with Sarah. We've got heaps of tools and resources for working mums to help you navigate your career. Thanks for listening.